This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Turn on the TV, and almost any night you'll find a police procedural program like CSI or Law & Order. And without fail in the program, some bit of science will pop up and will help crack the case or pin the murder on the suspect in court. Well, that's just great for fictional entertainment, but unfortunately that's not where the fiction science stops. It's become part of our American judicial system. Things like eyewitness identification, fingerprint comparison, interrogation of suspects, criminal lineups. These are not the final word in guilt or innocence, regardless of what your TV may have been telling you all these years. On Sunday, a new law goes into effect in Texas that helps those convicted of a crime make an appeal based on new scientific evidence that may contradict earlier forensic expert testimony. This half hour, we're talking about junk science in the courtroom with David Harris, law professor at Pittsburgh University and the author of Failed Evidence, Why Law Enforcement Rejects Science, and Jeff Blackburn, chief counsel of the Innocence Project. And he was also the lawyer who took on and beat the Texas judicial system for the Tulia drug bust, one of the most controversial drug investigations in the state's history. Welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great. And also, we ask our callers, our listeners, to become callers. The number is 614-8980 if you've got a question or a comment about junk science in the courtroom. Let me start off with you, David Harris. So you write the book, Failed Evidence, Why Law Enforcement Rejects Science. What do you mean they reject science?
Well, I would say they resist science. And the reason I say that is because The science has come a long way when we talk about very basic aspects of criminal investigation, things like you were saying, eyewitness identification, like the use of very basic forensics. Everybody's familiar with DNA, and we think DNA can do miracles, but what about fingerprinting? What about ballistics? What about things like the taking of shoe prints or tire tracks? What about the interrogation of suspects? It turns out science has a lot to say, not only about what has been done wrong in the past, but how we could do things better going forward, what the best practices could be based on our current science. And though law enforcement loves DNA, and we see it all the time, like you said, in entertainment television, it's just not the case that they embrace all the science there is. In fact, there is a lot of resistance to better eyewitness identification protocols, to better interrogation protocols, and to doing things that make for better use of crime laboratories, fingerprints, and so forth. The reasons for this are complex, but it is not because it's more expensive. It is not because of anything like that. It's because that law enforcement establishment as a whole, and I mean police and I mean prosecutors, has generally, not everybody, but generally resisted change. They've become very entrenched in the way they do things. They don't like to be told what to do. And the result is that things can sometimes go terribly wrong in some of these wrongful conviction cases that we have seen in Texas and many, many other states. And because of that, we get a reaction like the new legislation there in Texas. And I hope that that will be cause to improve some of this, because as science changes and improves and we get new science on, say, something like arson, and the old science is proved to be nothing but voodoo, we should be able to bring in new evidence in. And so a new law like this can be very useful.
Jeff Blackburn, let me ask you about this new law. It was carried by Senator Jeff Whitmire in the Senate and by Sylvester Turner in the House. The three people who voted against it in the Senate, one of them was Dan Patrick, who is a leading candidate for lieutenant governor of Texas, and that needs to be, I think people need to understand that. How is this new law going to change things in Texas?
Well, we think it's going to make a very fundamental change, and I have to tell you, this was a project of ours, especially me and a lawyer named, great lawyer named Gary Udishin out of Dallas. We drafted this bill about 6 years ago. It's interesting and important to know that it's taken this long, but you have to know. And first of all, Professor Harris, I want to tell you, I generally agree with you very, very much. And certainly that's been the case in Texas. But, you know, the great thing about Texas is that we've done so many things so wrong for so long that now it seems urgent to fix a lot of it. And I think that that's one of the reasons we got this bill passed. Also, here's what's really interesting and what's going on here. And some of this is kind of under the radar. But we have learned that through a lot of applied effort, we have gotten some law enforcement agencies to embrace good science and do the right thing. What we're doing in Texas right now, with a review that we launched with the State Fire Marshal's Office of old arson cases, we looked at over 1,000 cases. We identified about 8 or 9 seriously bad convictions. We took it to them. They created a panel of independent scientists, the best guys in the country, frankly. And together, we've worked through those cases. I think that we are creating a model for other states, but more important, you have to understand it's not an accident. And in general, law enforcement does resist change. They resisted eyewitness ID reform. But with enough applied effort, I think you can get them to turn around. The other thing is, it's inevitable. I mean, as science marches on and the law stays behind, eventually the law will be forced to catch up. And, you know, I'm very proud of what we've been able to do with the Fire Marshal's Office. We're doing this with the Forensic Science Commission in Texas. And in this one area, I can say that Texas, even though we have, in many ways, a very fundamentally broken criminal justice system, in this one area, I think that we're doing great work and really moving the ball forward.
Jeff, let me ask you, since it did take 6 years to get this through the legislature, is this a result of the botched criminal conviction of Michael Morton?
I don't think it was very directly related to the Morton case, because what we like to call junk science wasn't really a part of that. What I think it had more to do with was a couple of bad decisions of our high court, the Court of Criminal Appeals. They handed down a case not very long ago that finally put to rest the idea that you could, under existing law as it was then, get these cases heard again and get somebody another day in court. So there was a bad decision, and I think that got the attention of a lot of legislators. The conditions were right this past session, and I think Mr. Morton's case helped, not directly, but, you know, just by calling attention once again to the plight of the innocent in this state. We've gotten, you know, virtually every session of the legislature, there is some major cause celeb. This year it was Mr. Morton's case. Last session it was the Tim Cole case that, you know, my group handled and I handled. The first posthumous exoneration in U.S. history, from what I know, and certainly in Texas history. But the thing is, if you can get their attention and you can channel that attention into something constructive, we've learned that the legislature in this state can be very, very useful, and they'll give you a hearing, and with a little persistence, you can get laws passed.
All right, that's Jeff Blackburn, chief counsel of the Innocence Project. Also on the line, we've got David Harris, law professor at Pittsburgh University, author of Failed Evidence, Why Law Enforcement Rejects Science. We're talking about junk science in the courtroom. If you end up in a courtroom, don't you want to know that the science is actually scientifically science, or is it something that somebody just made up? We're going to drill down a little deeper. You can call in at 614-889-80. This is The Source on KSTX. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about junk science in the courtroom. David Harris, law professor at Pittsburgh University, author of Failed Science, Why Law Enforcement Resist Science. I got the title wrong earlier. It's Resist Science. So let me ask you, Professor Harris, what are some of the biggest problems that you see in the courtroom in regards to something that they say is lock solid, slam dunk evidence, but really is pretty wonky?
Well, it's changed over time. That's the interesting thing. You know, I'm sure many of your listeners know of the conviction of Cameron Todd Willingham down there in Texas in an arson case in which two of his children died. This man was executed, and his conviction was based on so-called arson science that had been used in courtrooms for decades, not just in Texas but elsewhere. And, you know, enough years went by and enough science was finally done on the way that fire works and the way that fires start, that when his case was reexamined, real scientists, not people who'd come up through a police department themselves, but real scientists, were able to show how fire actually worked, the fact that this fire was likely not an arson at all, and most of the facts in that case were considered disproven. Unfortunately, the case was already well into the system, and the governor down in your state did not allow the case to be reopened, as I understand it. So arson is one example. Another one that I think would surprise people is fingerprints, because it turns out that fingerprint evidence, which has always been held up as the gold standard of forensic evidence, while usually reliable, is not infallible. And that is how its proponents look at it. It is an infallible science. Well, it's neither science in the true sense of that word. It is not data-based. It is based on human interpretation and experience, which can, even if it's usually right, can sometimes go disastrously wrong. And it is not anything like infallible. I think many people might know the story of Brandon Mayfield, the attorney in the state of Oregon, who was mistakenly arrested based on a fingerprint collected at the Madrid train bombing site over in Spain. The FBI held him up as the number one suspect. They were sure they had their guy. They had the fingerprint 100% matched by their top fingerprint guy and then verified by an outside fingerprint guy, and on it went until, of course, the Spanish police found the real perpetrator and his fingerprint matched. And the FBI ended up having to do something in a fingerprint case that it rarely does in any kind of case, which is to not just pay damages but apologize. So many times the things that we think are the most solid don't have any science in back of them at all, and that's the great lesson of some of these changes. We really have to ask ourselves, what are we getting here? Is this a scientifically proven data-based practice, or is it something that we've just accepted for a long time and now should have another look at?
Let's go to the phones. Dan is on the line. He wants to join the conversation. Dan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Great. Hey, I appreciate it. I got a quick question. I used to be in Chicago, now I'm relocated down to San Antonio, and there were some big high-profile articles a few years back about some of the cases you're talking about. And I'm just wondering, were those articles the ones that shed light onto this situation, or was there are already kind of known problems in the process of determining who these people were? And I'll take my answer off here.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Thanks for calling. So Jeff Blackburn, chief counsel of the Innocence Project, you want to take that on?
Sure. Well, we've been involved in a lot of that. Okay. First of all, I think there are a couple of questions here. One is the role of the media in exposing injustice. Okay, look, if there wasn't media, if there weren't shows like the one we're on right now, and there weren't newspapers that could write serious articles in depth, there would be very little change in the criminal justice system. That's where it starts. It's not, and I want to tell you, Professor Harris, I really not only agree with you, I've read the book, it's excellent, and it's an honor to be on the program with you. You listeners are being treated to a very, very smart guy who's on the cutting edge of this topic. And it's a pleasure to be here with you. But sure. But I have to tell you, there's an ongoing crusade that usually involves the media, and some of the stuff that's being used out there, some of the junkiest, most horrible stuff ever you can imagine. I mean, we have people in prison in Texas that are there on the basis of what are called dog scent lineups, a practice we exposed a couple of years ago. Several of them. You know, like, I don't know, we think probably 10 to 15 people currently in prison. And in those cases, they used a guy who went around with trick dogs that he said could detect somebody's presence at a crime scene 15 years before. It's ridiculous. That's the state of affairs. I mean, it's a very much push-pull process. I don't want to sound like a Pollyanna and suggest that we're going to gradually change. I think that there's going to be change, but it's going to take the media and it's going to take high-profile cases. And it's going to take a lot of pushing to make that change happen.
But dog scent lineups are no longer allowed in the courtroom, and it was pretty limited. As I understand it, they would take like actual coffee cans that had held coffee and put them in the parking lot and allowed the dog to sniff them, and based on that, is the dog would hit on a particular piece of evidence, and they would use that as evidence in a courtroom, and talk about a very a non-clean environment to try and figure out what's what.
But that had been used routinely. I mean, the various courts of appeals in Texas were affirming the use of this stuff, saying it was fine. And what it took was some real pressure being applied through cases that we had. That was one of our board members did that, the Winfrey case, and I think finally got that to the courts. But I think the bottom line here is you can trust the media and public consciousness way ahead of anybody in the court system. There is natural resistance by prosecutors, by law enforcement, and by judges who are elected in this state and who are usually ex-prosecutors to this kind of change. We found that the legislature is more open-minded. We've also found that it's going to take this continued application of extreme pressure on high visibility cases over and over again with the help of the media to make these changes happen. And there are many more areas of bad science out there too. Fingerprints, which most people think are infallible, now hair and fiber analysis, we know is largely junk. Or at least it was in many, many cases, and starting with the FBI.
Well,
Let
me ask you about Fred Zane. Are you familiar with the name Fred Zane? He was a disgraced, disgraced medical examiner that was here in Bexar County, and before that he was in West Virginia, and he was known for fabricating evidence and getting people convicted. He was the medical examiner. He was a chemist. He was supposed to be an independent witness, but apparently he was co-opted by law enforcement. And I don't think that there may be other Fred Zanes out there with Professor Harris.
Yeah, well, there are other Fred Zanes. We seem to see a constant parade of them. The one that maybe sticks out most recently is up in the Massachusetts State Crime Lab. A woman up there who was a lab technician, she was doing the same kinds of things. They call it dry labbing. She was actually not doing any kind of work that was at all proving anything, and yet she was getting these incredible results. Now, she's been actually arrested and prosecuted, but in the meantime, lots and lots of people who were in jail have had to be let out. Cases were dropped. This kind of thing does incalculable damage to the criminal justice system, to the our perceptions of public integrity of the system, and so forth. But put aside the Fred Zanes and the people who are outright fraudsters, and you still have to look at the actual science that is being practiced when it's being done according to existing protocols. And we have a lot of things that are being done still today that don't qualify as science. I mentioned fingerprints a few minutes ago. There are many other things, except for kinds of classical chemistry where you are identifying a substance, something like that, or DNA, which actually comes out of the scientific a laboratory and not out of police work. Many of the things that get done in the normal course, they're not fraudulent, are pretty weak. And I think that's where we have to turn next. We have to not only get the people who are obvious frauds, but we have to get rid of techniques, things like forensic dentistry. Great for identifying a corpse, turns out not so great for identifying a bite mark. The stuff just basically should be never let into court.
So what would be your number one reform that you would like to see introduced into the police procedures?
Well, I think you can think of a lot of them just right off the top of your head. I want to see the kinds of eyewitness identification things that have been part of science for decades. Many states have now enacted this, like New Jersey has. I want to see recording of all police interrogations in custody. And then as far as forensics, I think you want to move towards database processes. I want to see procedures, protocols put into crime labs that you'd see in any kind of industrial process, things like proficiency testing and quality assurance, and the use of actual scientific testing. It simply isn't the case anymore that anybody can make the assertion, well, we know what we're doing, just leave us alone. Too many mistakes have been made. You have no testing to ferret it out. You have no qualifications that are required to work in a lot of these crime labs. We simply have to approach crime lab and forensic work at least as rigorously as we would testing a cough medicine, and we're just not doing that.
So, Jeff Blackburn of the Innocence Project, what would be their top reforms that you want to see put in?
Well, listen, here I go again, giving a reason for Texans to be proud of themselves, and I think we should be. The first big reform, and this is a crying need in many, many states, is to set up some sort of regulatory body for forensic science. We did that by creating a forensic science commission here. There was a lot of political pushing and pulling, an effort by Governor Perry to reduce its jurisdiction. That effort finally gave way to another piece of legislation this session, which expanded its jurisdiction. The result of that has been that we've begun to achieve through direct supervision by a government agency pretty much what Professor Harris was describing, which is a must. And the result of that is, you know, we have a dry labbing scandal going on in Texas right now, a very major one involving a guy named Salvador who worked for the DPS and was dry labbing cases so he'd look good. But the response that we've been able to create is pretty phenomenal. I was at a meeting with prosecutors and judges on this that was spearheaded by the Forensic Science Commission, and we've developed a way to handle these cases, not just these, but in the future, and to get these people out, but also to make sure it doesn't happen again. So the thing is, these are problems that can be fixed. I think that we both agree on that. I think there is a solution. We're starting to get to it here. And, you know, that's a big first step, is to make sure these labs are not out of control. At the same time, you can look at Colorado right now, where they're having a major disaster with toxicological testing, and they're refusing to do anything constructive about it.
Okay, Professor Harris, let me ask Professor Harris one last quick question. We're running short on time. If these reforms are kicked in, can the cops still get the bad guys off the streets?
Oh, absolutely they can. There's no problem with that. This is not going to be a situation where we have to choose between public safety and doing things right. Doing things right is the key to public safety. If you don't get the right bad guys arrested and off the street, the wrong ones stay on the street. I agree with Jeff that Texas has pulled way ahead on some of these things. You have a lot to be proud of down there.
All right. So I want to thank you, David Harris, law professor at Pittsburgh University, author of Failed Science, Why Law Enforcement Resist Science, and Jeff Blackburn, chief counsel of the Innocence Project, also the lawyer who beat the Texas judicial system on a Tulia drug bust, one of the most controversial drug investigations in Texas history. This is The Source. We'll be right back after the NPR news.